Hello and welcome to our podcast. Now, we have a special podcast for you today because we are joined by one of our bishops, a returning traveller no less. That's Bishop William Kenny, an auxiliary bishop of Birmingham and also a member of the Bishops' Conference Department for International Affairs. Bishop William, how are you?
Well as can be expected. I've broken my wrist while out in the in South Sudan. So with that said, well.
Coping gamely.
I hope so.
Right, well, you mentioned it, out in South Sudan, and that was a visit from round about the 23rd of September to the 2nd of October. Now, this seems to have been something of a joint CAFOD Bishops' Conference invitation.
That's
to you.
Correct.
Tell me a little bit about why you were there and what you saw.
Well, South Sudan is a new country, and the Bishops' Conference now has to decide what it's going to do with Sudan and South Sudan. And the bishops here had decided that they would support the bishops there, at least morally, not so much financially, but morally. And this was a first step towards this. Some of the Sudanese bishops have been here in London. And so this was a return visit, if you like, of my going there to see them.
What struck you initially about your visit? I mean, this is technically one of the world's youngest countries.
It's definitely, I think it's the last new member of the United Nations. It is what I think struck me most was it is a new country. It is very underdeveloped in many, many ways. And yet it is a country that does seem that it could have a good economic future.
And we always look at the traditionally Christian South, as it were, and Muslim North, although there are Christians in the North. How are you finding the faith in South Sudan?
In South Sudan, very much alive. People are obviously believing, churches are full, there's lots of activities going on around the churches. I saw that on the times I was out doing public services, talking to people. So there is quite a lot going on, oh yes.
So the fact that we now have Sudan and South Sudan, has the church been relatively unaffected by that?
I wouldn't say so. It has been affected by that because there have been these difficulties of travel between the two countries. There has been a rather naive view from Sudan that all Christians were automatically South Sudanese. That is not true. There are real Christians who are totally northern. And so it hasn't been easy and still is not easy. There are many, many questions there that still have to be solved and sorted out. Certainly some leaders in Sudan have said that Sudan is now a Muslim country, we can forget everything else, and that just is not true. And so there are going to be tensions and problems over that.
Well, I remember interviewing Bishop Makram Max, so I mean, we get a lot of evidence. We even see places like the Nuba Mountains where Muslims and Christians can live very comfortably side by side.
Oh yes, this has happened, of course. This is not true that there's not always tensions, but people do live comfortably side by side.
Obviously, you went to the Bishops' Conference and you met many bishops one-on-one. What sort of things were they saying to you?
I think many of them are worried about the contact they can have with their diocese. The infrastructure of roads, which we can come back to perhaps, is very, very underdeveloped. And so there is enormous problems of bishops keeping in touch with the people in their diocese. So that's one enormous problem. The other, of course, is that after a year, there's hardly any sense of national identity as yet. While people are basically very happy that this has happened, there's still not that sense of national identity. And that, of course, would affect the bishops as it affects everybody else. So there is somewhat a tendency that everything is discussed at a diocesan level rather than there being an idea of a national level. Also, you have two countries in the sense that Sudan and South Sudan are belonging to the same bishops' conference. That does make life difficult. I know in an earlier stage of my life, being a member of the Nordic Bishops' Conference, we were five countries, and that does create problems for any bishops' conference, not just for the Sudanese.
Well, obviously, they do have a Christian identity. Do you think that helps in sort of helping forge their new national identity?
I think it most definitely does, at least in South Sudan. There's no doubt about that, that the Catholic faith is part of that identity for the vast majority of the people who live there.
Now, I've seen some lovely pictures that were dropped in the Dropbox whilst you were out there, so I did get to monitor what you were doing. Now, I know that you celebrated Mass at the Catholic University in South Sudan, in the Juba faculty there, so that must have been good to be around young people.
I found it very good. I found it gave a lot of hope and encouragement. We can't think of a university in a Western European style that it's at that sort of level and that sort of expertise, but particularly the rector of the university turned out to be an extremely experienced and good man who, I think this was his fifth university he's founded in Africa, and a Jesuit, very hopeful, and yet he's a man almost 80 or over 80, and yet was very full of hope and life. I think we have the foundations of something that could be much bigger. It's got to find its way. Probably the educational standard would be more towards sixth form, as we would call it, rather than undergraduate. But it will get there. These things take time. You can't do everything in a day. And I think this gave enormous hope. And if at least the people we heard speaking, mainly the rector, but others there speak in that way, they were also very, very encouraging towards the young people who were there.
And of course, one of the largest public events you attended was celebrating Mass in the cathedral, Sunday Mass in the cathedral in
Juba. That's correct.
And there were quite a few people around as well, weren't there?
Oh, there were. The church was full, and it's a big church. It was the main Mass for the Sunday, also attended by the President, who is a Catholic, also the Speaker of the Parliament, and many other leading political dignitaries. It was also broadcast on the South Sudan radio. I'm not sure whether that was just for Juba or whether it was for the whole country, but it was certainly broadcast. And even if it was only for Juba, the copies of it will be given out to other people to broadcast as well. That was something which I will not forget. The atmosphere there, the people, the way they took part in that Mass. The other factor is that the President himself there at the end of Mass did use it to give his first report about the negotiations that had gone between Sudan and South Sudan over border, over various other matters. So we heard about that directly from the President, because of course he knew it was being broadcast, and so I think he used the occasion.
Well, it was somewhat something of a historic visit, wasn't it? Because whilst you were over there, the peace accord was signed. Tell me a little bit about that.
I know very little about it, other than what anyone can find on the internet. But it should restore contact between the two countries that travel. It should, perhaps most importantly, restore the passage of petrol and oil through Sudan from South Sudan, so that there will be income. One of the big problems they'd had during the months before we arrived there was, for instance, the many bureaucrats had not been paid because there was no money, literally, because this is at the moment their main source of money. It will, I think, eventually in the long term, if some sort of peace can be created, can lead to the South Sudan flourishing. The infrastructure of roads, even the little travelling we did, was notably bad. And yet it is a country which is very fertile and therefore could be a production of food, not just for itself, but also for export. But the roads at the moment could not bear you. And even a normal-sized lorry that you would see in Africa can't run on many of their roads. They're in such a bad condition.
Because you wouldn't want to be able to be plentiful in what you're producing and not being able to shift it to the people.
There's no point, absolutely. But at the moment, much food is coming in from Uganda, so they're importing food in a country which, without any doubt, could more than support its own need of food.
Do we know what the answer is to that?
I'd say government should be investing in infrastructure. Firstly, roads, but also electricity, also sanitation, all of these basic needs. If over, say, a 5, 10, 15-year period that was done, then you could, I think, possibly have quite a flourishing country. We were out and saw some of the CAFOD projects that on agriculture. Agriculture is a field which I am not in any sense an expert on, but it all looked, as far as an amateur can see, very good. What I really enjoyed about those was talking to the people, particularly to the chiefs who came to talk to us, and that gave much more information. But there is a need of schooling for children. There is, as I say, roads. If you've got to pick one thing, I would have said roads is probably the key to much of the problem.
And in your view, I know the church can't solve all the problems, but what do you think the church can do to sort of take things on a bit?
I think the church, through its agencies such as CAFOD, can do a certain amount of supporting people. We saw that in the projects that we saw, and they were excellent, again, as far as I could judge. I think the church also gives a rallying point for the people, so that, as we were talking, as I said at the very beginning, there is a lack of national identity so far, which, that's not criticism, that is just a statement of fact, because the country just hasn't existed long enough for there to be an identity. And there has been then troubles even in that time that it's been there. The other factor is that there is a cooperation between the Catholic Archbishop and the Episcopalian Archbishop in Juba, and they have given out at least two now letters, common letters, and again the church is providing, in other words, a basis for a new, again, new identity.
Did you consider it something of a privilege to be the first bishop from England and Wales to have been in the new South Sudan?
Most definitely. I was very surprised it was me, if I'm quite honest with you, but that's how these things fall out. You know, all right, I belong to the international department all my life as a bishop. I've travelled literally the world, so that in that sense I'm not surprised. But I had thought it would have been someone, shall we say, higher up the hierarchy who would have done this first trip.
And finally, Bishop William, what would you say to Catholics in England and Wales that are perhaps wondering either what they can do in terms of prayerful support or how they can learn more about the situation in South Sudan? What would you say to our people over here?
I would definitely say pray for the people there. They are a prayerful people. One of the things we asked them to do was to pray for us, and I did promise them prayers from England and Wales, so that definitely needs to happen. Secondly, insofar as people can, they need to support projects there. They're well worth doing. It's not for me to say what CAFOD should or should not be doing, but I'm sure CAFOD, insofar as it can, will continue with the projects that are there, and those are definitely worth supporting. Also, should we have visits from the bishops from South Sudan, then I hope some people will make those bishops welcome in their parishes. It's important for the bishops to also see normal Catholic life in this country, in our parishes, in the groups that work, all of this sort of thing. And I think, fourthly, insofar as we're interested in the politics of it, there's no harm in asking your MP or MEP, what is he doing about South Sudan? He might have to go and look it up on the map, but that does no harm whatsoever.
Bishop William Kenny, Auxiliary Bishop of Birmingham, thank you ever so much for your time today, particularly in light of that cast I see on your arm. Appreciate your time.
Thank you very much indeed.